The Connector. CT State Library. Preserving the Past. Informing the Future. May 2017, Volume 19, Number 2. The Connector, www.ctstatelibrary.org. May 2017. Group of people lined up in front of a government building. Vintage photo. At risk, the federal investment in libraries, archives, and museums. By State Librarian Kendall F. Wigan. On March 16, 2017, President Donald Trump proposed a budget, America First, a budget blueprint to make America great again, for discretionary spending in federal fiscal year 2018. It detailed proposed spending by department, amounting to an overall 10% increase in defense spending and a 10% decrease in non-defense outlays. Of great concern to libraries, archives, museums, and other memory institutions is the proposal to eliminate the National Endowment for the Arts, NEA, the National Endowment for the Humanities, NEH, and the Institute of Museum and Library Services, IMLS. Over the years, these programs have funded a variety of important projects in libraries, museums, and archives across Connecticut. The State Library receives annual funding from IMLS under the Grants to States program as part of the Library Services and Technology Act, LSTA, and has been the direct beneficiary of several NEH and IMLS grants. For federal fiscal year, FFY, 2016, the State Library received $2,022,715 in LSTA funds. Over the past several years, the State Library has received NEH grants totaling $524,034 under the National Digital Newspaper Program. That funding is being used to digitize historically significant Connecticut newspapers for inclusion in the Library of Congress's Chronicling America project. As a rule, presidential budgets are pretty much dead on arrival. But we are in a political climate where some of the old rules don't apply. With Republican control of the presidency and Congress, there is some reason to be concerned about the future of NEA, NEH, and IMLS. In 2015, the U.S. House Republicans issued the Path to Prosperity, Fiscal Year 2015 budget resolution, which called for eliminating, you guessed it, the NEA, NEH, and IMLS. In reference to the IMLS, the plan said his function can be funded at the state and local level and augmented significantly by charitable contributions from the private sector. I think we all know the state and local funding situation. The LSTA funds have a maintenance of effort requirement, which has been important in maintaining state funding for libraries. The federal government has provided aid for public libraries since 1956. On June 19 of that year, President Eisenhower signed the Library Services Act, LSA, into law. Although the federal role in support of libraries has been questioned over the years, one constant has been the need to serve the underserved and the disadvantaged. There has been debate over the years as to whether the program should foster innovation through grants for demonstration projects or fund ongoing services. A theme throughout the history of this program is the important role libraries play in providing the citizenry with access to learning opportunities and information in a variety of formats in a rapidly changing economy, and the need to support libraries in these efforts. Throughout its history, the program has been state-based. With overall goals established by Congress, the states have administered their grants to best meet the needs of their libraries and the citizens they serve. Congress debated the Library Services and Construction Act in 1963 as the successor to LSA. In the debates, Thomas McIntyre, D.N.H., stated that we are living in a complex and rapidly changing age. It is an age built upon the creation, the collection, and the rapid dissemination of accurate information. At the very heart of this communications chain stands the American Free Public Library, which collects and makes available books and other materials to all who have need of them. Those words could not be more true today. Funding for public libraries in Connecticut derives mainly from local tax dollars and private support. State funding supports the sharing of resources across all libraries, lessening the burden on any one library while providing the citizens of the state with the information they need. Federal funds are matched by state funds to support library services to the blind, those with print disabilities and those with physical disabilities, resource sharing, and innovation in libraries through small grants. Libraries are a national resource that deserves support from government at all levels. Now is not the time to cut the modest, but effective, federal investment in libraries. In fact, let's think big. How about a federal investment of $1 per capita? Federal funds are matched by state funds to support library services to the blind, those with print disabilities and those with physical disabilities, resource sharing, and innovation in libraries through small grants. Bring History Alive for Kids. By IT analyst Jacqueline Bagwell. History on the Move Truck. The Museum of Connecticut History has great stuff, but not every school can get their students to Hartford to see many of these treasures firsthand. So our museum curator Patrick Smith goes out to many schools every year to connect students with Connecticut history. To make history vibrant and engaging in schools, the Museum of Connecticut History wants to do more and bring the historical treasures to the schools. History on the Move project intends to use a refurbished bookmobile for our museum curator to load up with fascinating artifacts for display and present wonderful programs to schools around the state. Would you like to help our museum curator Patrick Smith bring items from the Museum of CT History to school children across the state? Our goal is to retrofit the bookmobile, pictured here, to accommodate books and historical items from the Museum of Connecticut History. This would enable Patrick to carry educational items to schools throughout the state. If you are interested in helping support this fine project, read more on our or go straight to the page. Website. GoFundMe. Museum curator Patrick Smith speaking with an attentive group of children at the Summers Public Library during a Connecticut Invents program. Patrick with the Connecticut Made Wiffle Ball. Voices of WWI Chris Radio Project Kickoff. By State Archivist Lizette Pelletier. Project launch March 6, 2016 in the Museum of CT History from left to right, Secretary of the State Denise Merrill, Director of Education and Rehabilitation Brian Sigman, Chris Radio Executive Diane Weaver Dunn, Chris Radio Chairman Paul A. Young, U.S. World War I Centennial Commissioner John Monahan, Education Consultant Steve Armstrong, and State Librarian Kendall Wiggin. Picture credit, Chris Radio. Chris Radio logo. Ideal Group logo. CT State Library logo. National Archives, National Historical Publications Records Commission logo. On March 20, 2017, state officials, historians, archivists, educators, and Chris Radio, Connecticut Radio Information System, Board, staff, and volunteers gathered in Memorial Hall of the Museum of Connecticut History to launch a collaborative pilot project called Voices of World War I. Chris Radio, the Connecticut State Library, and Ideal Group have worked together over the past 2 years to develop a first-of-its-kind service to provide access to historic records and documents through human-narrated recordings for individuals who are blind or unable to read due to other print disabilities. The goal of this project is to demonstrate that archives and libraries can provide these individuals with access to the same historic documents that other students, researchers, and citizens have enjoyed. Financial support for this project is provided in part by the, which is the funding arm of the National Archives and Records Administration NARA in Washington, D.C. National Historic Publication and Records Commission NHPRC. Because the project coincided with the centenary commemoration of WWI, State Archives staff along with the project's advisory committee selected more than 100 historic WWI-era documents from the State Library's extensive archival and government documents collection, including servicemen's diaries and letters to home, government pamphlets such as Cutting Your Meat Bills with Milk, and selections of articles published in Connecticut newspapers from the era. The staff also selected a number of the military service questionnaires that State Librarian George S. Goddard developed and collected during 1920 to 1930 from veterans and family members of those who died in combat that captured their memories and feeling about their service. Staff from the State Libraries Connecticut in WW1 Project scanned the documents. Other staff and volunteers provided transcripts of handwritten materials. Chris Radio volunteers then recorded each item as the person writing would have read it aloud. Careful attention was paid to pronunciation. The audio files are available on the Chris website. http://chrisradio.org. As part of the launch celebration, State Archives staff put a selection of the documents recorded in two display cases in Memorial Hall. Chris staff provided for each of the documents QR codes developed for its trademark museum service. Visitors are able to use their smartphones to listen to the human narrated recording for each document while they are viewing it in the case. Chris Access. The project also included the development of new technologies to help teachers, librarians, and archivists render hard copy historical documents into accessible formats for individuals with print disabilities as well as make them searchable. The new technology tools were developed by Ideal Group, an Ohio-based company that makes accessible mobile applications for people with disabilities. Following the launch celebration, Ideal Group President Steve Jacobs and Chris Radio Executive Director Diane Weaver Dunn demonstrated the new technology to members of the and interested State Library staff members at the State Library 75 Van Block Avenue facility. At the end of the grant, the tools will be made available free of charge to archives, libraries, and other institutions to allow them to expand accessibility of their collections. Connecticut State Historical Records Advisory Board. As the project progressed, educators on the project advisory committee realized that the recordings will also benefit classroom teachers by bringing history alive for their students. Rather than just reading about an event or viewing static images, students will be able to hear a letter, diary, or other contemporary account read aloud. To listen to recordings, go to and click on. For more on the State Library's WWI collections and events, visit the Connecticut in the Great War website at or the State Library's website at http://chrisradio.org. Voices of WWI. http://ctinworldwar1.org. http://ctstatelibrary.org. Voices of WWI Marketing Flyer. For the benefit of our children and their children, documenting World War I. By State Librarian Kendall F. Wigan. This article first appeared in Connecticut Explored Volume 15, Number 2, Spring 2017. In Connecticut, we are very fortunate to have incredible primary and secondary resource materials in unique collections around the state. The fact that some of the most significant records are held in the Connecticut State Archives is largely attributable to the vision and drive of one man, State Librarian George Goddard, 1900 to 1936. In 1917, the General Assembly passed legislation that provided for the depositing in the State Library all of the files and other official papers relating to the State Council of Defense, the Connecticut State Military Census, and other similar organizations in connection with the World War. At that time, the State Council of Defense established the Department of Historical Records within the State Library under the direction of Goddard. On November 2, 1918, the Committee on Historical Records, which advised the Department of Historical Records and was chaired by Goddard, met and decided that it was of great importance to secure from the several committees and departments that had been created by the Connecticut State Council of Defense a full statement covering the work accomplished or in progress. Goddard was instructed to request these reports, and on November 14, 1918, just 3 days after the armistice was signed, Goddard wrote to the chairman of the town war bureaus across Connecticut saying that their reports will be essential to an adequate understanding of the services their committee provided. He went on to say that the committee was interested in having available when needed the material necessary to formulate a true and adequate narrative of the part it has been Connecticut's duty and privilege to take. It is the duty of the Department of Historical Records to see that such official and reliable data is secured and made available here in our state library. In 1919, the Department of Historical Records became the Department of War Records by Act of the General Assembly. The goal of the War Records Department was, according to Goddard, to collect, classify, index and install all available material relating to Connecticut's participation, public or private, in the World War or the benefit of our children and their children. So eager was Goddard to show off the work of the Department of War Records, that he invited a reporter from the Hartford Courant for a tour. The story appeared in the Hartford Courant on July 27, 1919 under the headline Preserving the Records of Connecticut Soldiers with the subheading Our State Leads All Others in the Way It Is Tabulating the Information Concerning the Sons Who Went Forth to Do Their Part in Making the World Safe for Democracy. The reporter noted that Goddard was intensely interested in this work and convinced of the great value of the records the library had acquired and continued to acquire. While many states had found the task of indexing and classifying their war-related records daunting, Connecticut was sailing along serenely under the leadership of the state librarian, with a system that is simplicity itself. In 1975, the General Assembly repealed the language establishing the Department of War Records and instead substituted language calling for the state library to maintain a collection of war records, which it continues to do to this day. Few states have the breadth and depth of documentation of the state role in the build-up to the United States entry into the war and participation in the war as does Connecticut. Because of Goddard's leadership and his innate sense of the importance of documenting history and the diligent work of the women and men in the State Library's Department of War Records, today we are able to tell the story of Connecticut's role in the Great War. April 6, 2017 CT State Library WWI Centennial Commemoration. By the editor, Ursula Hunt. Education Commissioner Diana R. Wenzel with other distinguished guests. Sergeant Joseph Colavito, 102nd Army Band, singing the national anthem. The Connecticut State Library commemorated the 100th anniversary of the United States entry into World War I with an event in Memorial Hall that included the posting and retiring of the colors by the Connecticut National Guard, remarks from Governor Danil Malloy, State Librarian Kendall Wiggin, Commissioner Diana Wenzel, State Historian Walter Woodward, Commissioner of Veterans Affairs Sean Connolly, Lieutenant Colonel Timothy Tomcho, George King III and Dr. Jeffrey Klinger from the Ambulance 255 Project. The event began with a beautiful rendition of the national anthem sung by Sergeant Joseph Colavito, 102nd Army Band. Kendall Wiggin began the presentations by thanking the former state librarian George Seymour Goddard for recognizing the value of collecting the treasure trove of records from Connecticut World War I veterans. He commended Christine Pitsley for her efforts in organizing Connecticut's Remembering World War I, Sharing History/Preserving Memory project, which has evolved over the past year. Please visit the website at to see images collected from over 100 descendants of the war and news about digitization and other events taking place throughout the state. Governor Malloy recognized the state of Connecticut for its many contributions to the war. State historian Walter Woodward spoke about Connecticut's massive role in manufacturing efforts and the impact on Connecticut's workforce. See his remarks on the next page. He also spoke of Governor Holcomb's involvement and the great patriotism shown by Connecticut residents. Education Commissioner and State Library Board Member Diana Wenzel spoke about the importance of bringing the history of WWI into the classroom, and she thanked the organizations that have helped provide the necessary material for history and social study teachers in the state. Military Department Lieutenant Colonel Timothy Tomcho spoke about the Connecticut National Guard's contributions and Connecticut legislation passed during the war period that was instrumental to our success. Commissioner of Veterans Affairs Sean Connolly welcomed and recognized veterans from all wars and the importance of organizations that work together to preserve their legacy. George King III from the Ambulance 255 Project and his colleague Dr. Jeffrey Klinger were not able to bring a 1914 model ambulance, which they restored, due to rain, but they did bring photographs and a video. The ambulance was used to evacuate soldiers during the war. Dr. Klinger spoke about the challenges and tragedies faced by both drivers and soldiers. He also mentioned the value of being able to share these stories with others, however difficult that may be. On the CTN website or watch the video from the http://ctinworldwar1.org. Watch the CTN video of the event. CSL website. Remarks from the World War I Centennial Commemoration. By state historian Walter Woodward. These remarks were presented at the Yanks Are Coming, Connecticut's centennial commemoration of the U.S. entry into World War I on April 6, 2017 in the Museum of CT History. When World War I began in July 1914, most Kinect icons viewed it as a spectator event, someone else's fight, in a place far away. In his 1915 State of the State speech to the General Assembly, Governor Marcus Holcomb failed to mention the war as something that would affect Connecticut. But affect that state it did, profoundly and almost immediately. From the beginning, the warring European powers flooded Connecticut's arms makers with huge orders. Connecticut became England and France's armory years before it became its ally. In Bridgeport, New Haven, Hartford, and the Brass Valley, munitions factories ramped up production on a massive scale, hiring thousands of new workers, never enough, and pushing them to provide maximum output. The pressure to produce led to labor strife, the 422 strikes affecting 68,000 workers in 1915 and 16 were the most in the state's history, though the arc of increased production was unwavering. Holcomb was quick to conclude that American involvement in a war of this scale was a question of when, not if, and even as the nation prepared to re-elect Woodrow Wilson on a campaign slogan that said he kept us out of the war. Holcomb bent his efforts to preparing Connecticut and Kinect icons for the battles to come. The sinking of the passenger liners Lusitania in May 1915, and the Sussex in 1916, fed Connecticut's anti-German hostility, as did rumors, related to the state's massive defense production, that Germany secretly planned to use the state as a base for Fifth Column saboteurs. Warned by a Holcomb official that the penalty for failure to prepare is national death, Connecticut mobilized well in advance of American entry into the war. In 1915 and 1916, encouraged by state officials, businessmen paid their own expenses to receive military training at a camp in Plattsburgh, New York. Yale alumni funded construction of an on-campus armory. 100,000 spectators lined Hartford streets to watch 17,000 marchers stage a patriotic preparedness parade in June of 1916. Similar marches were held in cities and towns around the state. That same summer, the Connecticut State Guard was the first to answer Woodrow Wilson's call to mobilize troops to stop the cross-border incursion of the Mexican guerrilla Pancho Villa into Arizona. Other states may have voted for isolationism, but Holcomb, without making a single campaign speech, was re-elected in the fall of 1916 on a platform of preparedness. When Germany, in January of 1917, declared their intention to sink all North Atlantic shipping, Holcomb recognized war was imminent, and called on Kinect icons to set aside any and all differences and meet on the common plane of patriotism. Within 2 months, a volunteer group of over 10,000 citizens conducted and completed a statewide census of every Connecticut male over 16 years to determine their capacities and ability to serve in the military in case of a draft. A home guard was created to protect the state's factories and infrastructure from sabotage, and in 3 months 10,000 men ranging from Civil War veterans to high school students, were organized, uniformed and armed. So by the time this day came, 100 years ago today, Connecticut and its people were ready for war. Connecticut troops would be among the first to see action in France, and earn fame, honor, and respect for their battlefield bravery and courage under fire. And they would be supported back home by a populace of men, women and children committed to sacrifice and service on the home front, in the cause of peace. And sacrifice they did, but that's another story, for another time. As Governor Holcomb would say, "The war aroused us from our lethargy and for 18 months we thought seriously, and acted patriotically, and unitedly." It is that seriousness, and patriotism, that readiness to pay the price of freedom, that we remember, and give thanks for today. The Great War in 8 Weeks. By Curator Patrick Smith, Museum of Connecticut History. War Horse. Stubby with his owner/best friend PVT James Robert Conroy. WWI Brody helmet from the museum's collection. Major Gervais Raoul Loughberry, and a unit mascot, who lived for a short time in Connecticut and flew for the Lafayette Escadrille during the war. Connecticut's role in World War I was featured as part of a class Send the Word, the Yanks Are Coming, presented to a group of 4th to 6th grade homeschooled students. I recently finished teaching this 8-week class, which I created, to 17 students as part of the Monday homeschool classes hosted by the Lutz Museum in Manchester. Each week the kids and I delved into a new topic related to the Great War and Connecticut's role in it. Objects, documents, and images from the museum and library made the topic come alive for the kids, who were thrilled to see what new treasures I brought in each week. The students who signed up for the class were also provided with the book War Horse by Michael Moore Pergo, and as a group we read the book and explored topics in it each week. We covered a lot of history in 8 weeks. The class began with a look at the pre-war political situation in the world and several events that acted as a trigger for the war. We of course looked at famous battles and soldiers' stories from the many nations that took part. Letters, descriptions, and documents from Connecticut soldiers brought the war closer to home for those in the class. One of my favorite classes was one where we looked at trench fighting during the war. I set up the classroom as a trench using desks and tables for the trenches and overturned chairs as barbed wire in no man's land. I had the kids tucked down low as I read descriptions of the miserable conditions in the trenches and showed them pictures from several fronts of the war. Periodically I lobbed paper mortars to keep them on their toes. The technology of war really changed during WWI. We examined the role of airplanes, submarines, and tanks. Connecticut aviators were highlighted, and our industrial output, including tanks, other weapons, and military supplies made in the Nutmeg State, were featured. The effort on the home front back here in Connecticut included learning about war bond drives, Red Cross efforts, and food conservation. A different perspective on the war was shown by using art, music, and poetry of the period. We all went over there for a time. The book War Horse allowed us a chance to look at many different wartime experiences. Animals played a big part in the war, and we learned about the use and care of horses, pigeons, and of course dogs, including Connecticut's own Sergeant Stubby. The book also gave us a glimpse into the disastrous effect the war had on civilians throughout Europe and beyond, including children and young adults who fought in many battles or suffered its consequences. As we finished the book and the semester, the kids and I discussed the outcome of the war and what came after the war to end all wars. It was of course World War II. A few of the kids and parents asked if I was teaching about that next. I think I'll need more than 8 weeks. World War I Twitter Project. Submitted by WWI Project. Coordinator Christine Pitsley. State Library launching WWI Twitter campaign featuring Hartford Courant's original coverage. Article written by staff writer Gregory Hladke, copyright 1764 to 2017. Hartford Courant. Used with permission. A century after the U.S. joined the war to end all wars, the is launching a project to use Twitter as a vehicle for historical posts featuring the daily coverage of World War I from the Hartford Courant. Connecticut State Library. The Over the Top, Hartford Courant reports the Great War social media campaign is intended to give today's internet-oriented generation a sense of how the war was reported on a day-to-day basis when the U.S. entered the conflict. Each post will show the Courant's front page from that particular day during the war. Library officials plan to follow each day's posts with other tweets about other Connecticut stories relating to the war, both at the front in Europe and at home. Hartford Courant. We've been thinking about this for a while, said Christine Pitsley, project manager for the library's new Twitter campaign. About a month ago, officials decided to go ahead with the social media effort. This is a way to get this information out there, Pitsley said, and to give 21st century people a feeling for how newspapers covered major events 100 years ago. Most people on social media probably don't read newspapers anymore, she said. Additional, more in-depth stories on topics including manufacturing of gas masks to whether public schools should be required to provide military training will also be posted on the page. Pitsley said library officials will be working on those in-depth articles with an arm of the nonprofit group. Libraries Facebook. ConnecticutHistory.org. Connecticut Humanities. There will also be images from the Hartford Courant added to Instagram. Those images will come from ProQuest, which has put together a digital database of the Hartford Courant's archives to make it available to libraries and researchers. Anyone interested in the World War I Twitter campaign can follow it via @tinww1, or #OTHSI. The in-depth content on Facebook can be accessed by going to @tinworldwar1 or on Instagram, @tinww1. President Woodrow Wilson asked Congress on April 2, 1917 for a declaration of war against Imperial Germany. His request came more than 2.5 years after the start of WWI at a time when Germany and its opponents, Great Britain, France, and Italy, were locked in a trench war stalemate across Europe. Wilson's decision came after a series of controversies, including the sinking of the British passenger ship the Lusitania in 1915 that resulted in the deaths of 128 Americans and disputes over Germany's unrestricted submarine warfare. In early 1917, Germany infuriated the U.S. by sending the famous Zimmermann telegram to Mexico, urging that nation to go to war against the U.S. in the event America declared war on Germany. The war ended on November 11, 1918 with Germany's defeat. http://cthumanities.org. Twitter icon. Facebook icon. Instagram icon.